It's time for Twig this week in Google. Jeff Jarvis has the week off, and he's going to be sorry because there were some big stories. Fortunately, Mike Elgin and Stacey Higginbotham are here to talk about Amazon's purchase of Whole Foods, Travis Kalanick stepping down. The world is changing. What does it all mean? We'll explain it next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly, CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 410, recorded Wednesday, June 21st, 2017. Addicted to convenience. This Week in Google is brought to you by LegalZoom. LegalZoom's helped more than a million people with DBAs, LLCs, incorporation, and more. Visit LegalZoom.com and enter Twig at checkout for special savings. And by NatureBox. Delicious snacks made from high-quality ingredients. Eat well and feel better. Visit NatureBox.com/Twit to save 50% on your first order. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show where we cover the latest news from Google and Facebook and Twitter and the world about us. Jeff Jarvis has the day off, probably traveling. So we brought in another traveler in his place, joining us from Cannes in France, Mike Elgin. Good to see you, Mike.
Leo Laporte, great to see you. You know, you're back in that country, and I am not in that country, but it's great to see everybody traveling. And I will do my best to be as smart and angry as Jeff Jarvis. So I'll do my utmost.
Really, there's no point in trying. There's no one better at cranky than that.
Yeah,
than
good
Jeff.
Point. Good point.
Also with us, Stacey Higginbotham of Stacey on IoT, formerly of GigaOM. Hi, Stacey.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I am back from vacation.
Where'd you go? Great. What'd you do?
Costa Rica. With my family.
Ecotourism.
So, ecotourism. I tried to surf.
What do you mean tried to surf?
It's very difficult to surf.
It is hard, isn't it? Were you able to stand up at all?
I did get there, but I was not able to stand up in balance. It was too much.
Yeah, I know. Did they give you one of those really wide floaty boards to start with?
Oh, my gosh. I think I had the junior board.
Oh, it's so much fun, though.
I had a great time. Even though I could not surf, I could watch my daughter surf, and that was awesome. And I just had a great time.
Yeah. For some reason, the little kids, maybe because they have a lower center of gravity, they seem to be better.
They lift less mass.
Right.
I'm totally with it. Just popped right up there.
Welcome home. Wow, this is a traveling show because I just got back from vacation as well. And who filled in for me? I forgot. Jason Howell filled in last week, right? Well, thank you, Jason, for filling in for me. Both times? No, all right. Appreciate it, Jason. Did anything happen while I was gone? Oh, I heard. In fact, it's funny because we had very little internet access and I wasn't really able to keep up with the news. But for somehow, Amazon buying Whole Foods really broke through the silence. That was a big darn story this week. And what's funny is that Amazon got it effectively, in a way, got it for free. It was a $13.7 billion all-cash deal for Whole Foods, but their stock price went up more than their value went up more than that because their stock price went up so high. So you might say that they got it for nothing. To give you an idea of how big an acquisition this is, before the $13.7 billion acquisition, the next biggest was Zappos for $1.2 billion, Twitch for under a billion, Kiva Systems, Souq. This is by far the biggest acquisition. What does it mean? What is the strategy? Why does Amazon want a grocery store of all things?
Who wants to go? Mike, you or me?
You start and I'll let Mike.
Go. I can go.
We'll let you go, Mike, and then I'll tell you what it really means because Ben Thompson told me.
Oh, hey, I was actually thinking Ben Thompson was the smartest guy in the room on this one. It's a last mile distribution network for Amazon. So it gets them access to like Ben Thompson's. Amazon is its own best customer with AWS and with the other products that it's or services that it's released. And this makes with Whole Foods a huge customer for its delivery network. Plus, it pushes it out to the edge just a little bit more for if you're going to do like drones and that sort of thing, or even just pickup lockers.
So they bought it for the deal. For the physical locations?
Both the physical locations and, as Ben Thompson said, as a grocery distribution is the most, I guess, it's not maybe the most, but it's a just-in-time, huge turnover, lots of distribution, like logistical kind of business. And this is something Amazon really needs to, or it's already had, but it wants to expand into this even more. And groceries are a whole new element with perishable goods and all that fun stuff.
Is that what you're thinking too, Mike?
Well, I don't think we should undervalue or underestimate the perfection of Whole Foods in finding locations. We actually, we help somebody find an apartment or whenever we're going to do anything that has a location base, if you assume that Whole Foods are in the best neighborhoods in terms of other resources that are in those neighborhoods, everywhere there's a Whole Foods, there's also public parks, there are good schools, there are Starbucks, there are all these other premium stores and things like that. They're very, very, very good and very disciplined at finding good locations. So the location thing is huge. The second thing is that, and it's exactly what Stacey said, these can be distribution centers for not only rapid delivery, 1-hour delivery in the suburbs in the same way that they do it in New York City, but also the delivery of refrigerated goods in a more cost-effective way. That's a big thing. But there are two other things. One of them is grocery delivery. Everybody wants to crack grocery delivery because if you can get people in the habit of buying their groceries in a delivery scenario, and everybody loses money on it. I'm old enough to remember Webvan, where they basically tried and failed to have a grocery delivery business. This gives Amazon the opportunity to just nail that right out of the bat with an existing loyal customers. Around 69%, I think that's the number. I could be getting that wrong. Chat room can correct me. But there's a huge overlap between Whole Foods customers and Amazon Prime members. So the Whole Foods customers are basically already mostly Amazon's Prime, their best customers, and they're already signed up and so on. And so the third biggest element of this is that grocery stores are actually becoming extremely interesting places. Over the next 10 years, experts in the industry expect grocery stores to be experience centers. You go there to take cooking classes. You go there to learn things. You go to their hangout. A lot of Whole Foods they've set up bars and bistros and restaurants and cafes in the stores. People are spending hours there. They're reading rooms, essentially like coffee houses or whatever, where you can just read books and magazines and newspapers. And they have local bands and poetry readings and beatniks and hippies and all, you know, the whole bit, and community bulletin boards where people gather to do, you know, their grocery stores are becoming sort of town centers in a way, and they're going to evolve in that. And Amazon, if you look at what Amazon's trying to do in brick and mortar retail, they're trying to figure out what to do. They have a robotic store on their campus. They have some bookstores that have some automation. They use it to sell Amazon Echo. I mean, there's all kinds of synergies. And again, what's important for Amazon is the quality of the customer. In the same way that Apple has like these premium customers who spend lots of money on devices, Amazon is essentially doubling down on these Amazon Prime type of customers who spend a lot of money, who are willing to spend extra for delivery, whatever it takes. And I just think it's a brilliant move by Amazon. And I don't think the stock price really demonstrates. I mean, the stock prices go up and down. But and I also think it's interesting that all the other grocery chains tanked in terms of their stock price when this was announced. But I think over the long term, Amazon's going to do its Amazon thing. It's going to bring prices down, run along a sort of almost a zero profit level, and just drive growth, drive everybody else out of the business, out of the premium grocery business. I just think this is gold for Amazon. It's just a playground for all of their high tech food-related delivery, drone delivery projects that they want to even think about.
Yeah. I'm going to disagree a little bit with you there, Mike, just on the idea of a grocery store becoming that kind of Starbucks style third place experience center for stuff, because I don't feel, I kind of don't see that happening from a grocery store perspective. But also because I don't think that's like a real Amazon strategy or place they really want to be. But I do think they want to be in food delivery for a variety of reasons. And I actually wrote a little bit about like what Amazon can do with food when the deal broke. But that's the only thing I'm going to quibble with on you.
I think actually you're both right in the sense that Stacy's looking more at the immediate benefits. It's a real estate play. It's a, you know, it's a brick and mortar play. But I think, Mike, you're right in the sense that in the short term, it pays for itself, I think, as a real estate play and as a delivery play. But in the long term, Amazon, you know, this is where I thought Ben was really right on. Let me quote from Ben Thompson, of course, is the creator of Stratechery, which he's been on the show many times. We think the world of him, Stratechery.com. He, and this is kind of what you said, he bills this as Amazon's new customer. The Whole Foods is actually now a new customer, just like AWS is a customer. But I think where I got very interested is when he talks about Amazon's changing mission statement. So in the original mission statement, their original S1 in 1997, they said, Amazon's objective is to be the leading online retailer of information-based products and services with an initial focus on books. That's exactly what they were. They started as a bookstore, but they wanted to be a retailer of information-based products and services. Then as time went by, their mission statement changed to our vision is to be the Earth's most customer-centric company, to build a place where people can come to find and discover anything they might want to buy online. And then now he says they've eliminated the second clause. Literally, Amazon's mission statement today is just the single sentence, we seek to be the Earth's most customer-centric company. But he points out that really their goal is to take a cut, and I really like this, to take a cut of all economic activity. Now, obviously, that's not doable, but it's a great goal to say every transaction, we want to be the middleman in every transaction. And I think Amazon, in the long run, sees, and I think they're not far off, I think it's just maybe less than a decade off, almost all purchases occurring online. Mm-hmm. In fact, they just announced a new service where you can buy a bunch of clothes and try them on and then send them back. This is going to be death to sponsors of ours like Trunk Club and so forth, because Amazon's going to get in this. And not only that, they're going to give you a bigger discount the more you keep. So they're going to, and of course, tie that with the Echo Look, right, which has the camera and then looks at you and says, oh, not that, maybe that. Amazon's going to, so that's an area where people, it's shoes too. For years, oh, you can't buy shoes online. You got to try them on. Well, they've proven clothes and shoes can be sold online. I think people today say, I don't want to squeeze the melons. I can't sell groceries on. I think it's, but I see, you know, you're right, Mike. There have been a lot of online retail companies that have, Peapod and, you know, as you mentioned, what was it, Webvan, have all kind of dashed against the rocks here. But maybe they were just too early. If anybody could do it, Amazon could do it. They've got this new Dash wand, right, which reads the barcodes on all the foods in your refrigerator and then does the shopping. It has Amazon Fresh. Let me just finish, then go ahead.
Yeah.
And so what I think is, you're right in the short term, Stacy, but in the long run, Amazon's saying, well, what happens if all transactions, first of all, we want a piece of all transactions. That'll be easiest if they're all online and we do delivery. What happens, though, to stores, to people? People want to go somewhere. They want to do something. And I wish I could remember, because somebody who's been a contributor on this show for years, maybe it was you, Mike, but I think it was somebody else, has always said, no, the future of retail is experiences, not purchases. That ultimately, you'll go to a bookstore not to buy a book, but for lectures, to see, because people do like to be around people. Movie theaters realize the only way they could survive is to become experience centers, not movie theaters. That ultimately, the future of brick and mortar is experiences. And I think Amazon, in the long run, said, you know, in the short run, they've got these stores, they've got this real estate, they've got this physical presence. In the long run, in order to get a piece of every transaction, to become the middleman for the world, the way you do that is putting everything online, and then you keep these stores for experiences. Doesn't that make sense, Stacey, as a kind of a future?
I think stores for experiences are fine. I think there's two really interesting things if you think about the physical retail experience that Amazon's doing, and they're very different. The Amazon Go people-less kind of perspective, which is a very convenience-oriented, I'm going to get this, I'm going to pop in, grab it, and go, for a situation like, you know, lunch maybe near your office.
But that's also an experiment. Distance. I don't know if that's what they see as the end game.
Right. But I think there's a lot of value, actually, in something like that, I think, even though many people will have delivery right to wherever they are.
But you're right. There's times when you want it now.
Right.
Yeah.
But I also, I don't quibble with the idea of experiences. I just quibble with the idea of going to a grocery store for that experience. And I've been to.
You think it's a grocery? What if it's a, like, there's cooking classes? And
so there are cooking classes. If you go to the Whole Foods in Austin, when Whole Foods built its original headquarters in Austin, that's exactly what it was. It had a cheese bar, a wine bar, a beer cave. It has still cooking classes. It is an experience.
Was,
I mean, you go there and it's not a flop. They've closed some of those things down.
But they open similar things in the London store, which is a really phenomenal Whole Foods. And they've tried, you know, one of the things about Whole Foods is fascinating is that they're super innovative and they let the stores sort of do the innovation themselves. I think there's something like 75 Whole Foods stores that actually have bars with microbrews, multiple taps, mm-hmm. TV sets, big lounge chairs. And according to what I've read, none of that came from HQ. The stores themselves came up with those ideas independently to sort of give people something to do. Probably, I mean, for the most part, it's like give husbands something to do, drink beer while the rest of their families are shopping or whatever. But yeah, they're a pretty innovative company in terms of letting the stores themselves create these experiences that Stacey's talking about in each individual store.
But look what they did with the 365 stores, which is their new kind of program for expansion, because they're kind of tapped out on the existing high-end experiential thing. And the 365 stores are much more bare bones, minimalistic. They're designed for millennials. Things don't cost as much. They stock the 365 brand of organic foods as opposed to, like, I don't know, the insanely delicious French balsamic vinegar I bought at Whole Foods, you know. There is a place for some experiential centers, but I don't think that's where they're going to bet the farm. But this is like a total small thing to be arguing about over the big impact of this deal.
I totally agree with that. And when Amazon thinks about experience, they're not thinking about people sitting around drinking beer and taking cooking classes. They're thinking about more data, monitoring the consumer behavior. Amazon Go is the name of Amazon's amazing, incredibly high-tech grocery store that is on their campus. I think it might even still be in beta. It was supposed to open months ago, but it wasn't quite ready. But this store is crazy. I mean, it's crazy what they do. Basically, what the idea is, you just go in, you pick items, and you walk out, and your Amazon account is just charged automatically. They know what you bought. How do they know what you bought? Machine learning. So they have cameras that watch you pick up items. The shelves themselves are scaled, so they know how much everything weighs. Mm-hmm. So you remove something that the AI thinks looks like a canister of yogurt. The weight differential is about the same as a canister of yogurt. They look at your history and say, oh, this person always buys yogurt. They're recognizing your face as you pick the yogurt off the thing. And they take all this data together and say, they just picked up yogurt off the shelf. And then yogurt is charged to your account. Later on, you can put it back. It sort of reverses that and all this kind of stuff. I mean, it's really crazy. But the hint about what Amazon is after can be found inside the store. They know what behavior looks like, and they've gathered data with what people do on Amazon.com. What they don't know is what you do in a brick and retail store, how long you linger, how long you spend looking at things. Are you reading ingredients? Are you taking something and then putting it back? Are you concerned about the price? So what is really happening with your mind as you're trying to decide what to buy and what not to buy? So Amazon Go is their big attempt to figure that out. And I think what they're really thinking now is, okay, Whole Foods is a huge opportunity for us to harvest all kinds of data that you can't gather on people when they're simply shopping on Amazon.com.
Right. And that is a huge, so I wrote on my site, I did a few things on what it means for food, because there's a couple things there. I didn't get into the data aspects as much, but getting food data on the web and digitizing food data is really a challenge. One, because all of the items, they can look a little bit different, right? So for machine learning and computer vision purposes, you know, a beet and a fennel may look close enough, or a parsnip and a carrot may look close enough, you know, that it becomes challenging. There's also the idea that these things are all called different names. Like we call arugula, arugula, and people somewhere else call it rocket. So Amazon's going to be able to get a lot of data about what people are buying, how they're buying. And for Amazon, they have historically focused on buying data. Their recommendation engine is all about getting you to purchase more stuff. So getting the actual data on how and what you buy is way more relevant to them. So if you think about Google being focused on search data and how that affects what they're doing, Amazon's kind of like, don't care as much about that. Give me the actual buying data. So this will be very valuable to them for that.
Quick prediction too. I think that one business Amazon would love to get into is the meal kit business, the Blue Apron kind of business. And
right.
Whole Foods would enable them to use Whole Foods markets and Whole Foods inventory as the foundation for that kind of business.
So we did for a long time say, oh, you're never going to buy shoes online. You buy shoes online. You're never going to buy clothes online. You do buy clothes online. Do you think it's impossible to say people will buy groceries online? I mean, dry goods is one thing. Canned goods, fine.
You do chips, Blue Apron.
Yeah, but I don't do it for all my shopping. Obviously, I need to go to the grocery store for fresh goods. Can that be done online?
I think so. Here's where I think things get really, really interesting. When you have all of this data, it is possible that Amazon will look at me like so I'll say in my family, we meal plan. We have a kid and we plan about 4 or 5 meals a week in advance, and the rest of the time we're just kind of throwing stuff around or eating out. For staples, you can use something like the Dash Wand, which is like, right. Hey, I just use this.
We use Safeway for all dry goods. They just come every few weeks, and it's just all the boxed and canned stuff that you don't need to look at.
And then for all the fresh food, because we buy all of that, having a trusted supply chain, which for a lot of people, Whole Foods is expensive, but that's what it is. Just telling them you want that, it's no different than like trusting Blue Apron for giving you fairy eggplants, which I had never even heard of.
That's one thing Blue Apron has proven you can do. I think it's been at a great cost, but to really bring you high quality produce. Because, you know, that's, I think, the biggest concern is, I'm going to get watermelon that are, you know, overripe, or I'm going to get apples that are bruised. I think that's the big concern. I want to look at those. But if you always got, as we do with Blue Apron, they're a sponsor, but it's also the fact that they have some sort of quality assurance that really you always do get perfect produce. And you would trust Whole Foods to do that probably. Now, here's the big thing that keeps Whole Foods, and one of the reasons, by the way, Whole Foods was a bargain is because they were struggling.
Mm-hmm.
They're not doing well.
Right.
And partly that was because it was a very high-priced store. We called it Whole Paycheck. I mean,
Paycheck.
Yeah. But people who shopped there, affluent, upper-middle-class people who cared more about the quality of their food and organic, whether this is true or not, because sometimes I wonder if Whole Foods' commitment to organic was that genuine. But that whole health food thing, and we're willing to pay more, and you know, we're kind of less price sensitive. But if Amazon wants to turn Whole Food around and make it grow, and don't they drop the price? Don't they make it more accessible to everybody? Or do they care? Would they? I think they would want
Whole
it to
Foods
get.
Was,
oh, or
they were moving in that direction.
Or did they,
were they?
Yeah.
Well, that's what the 365 stuff was.
Oh, okay. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Mike. Go ahead.
You could imagine all kinds of innovation on flex pricing. I mean, one of the things that here's a couple of tips for Whole Foods customers. And I learned this from Amira, who's like who I think she interviewed the CEO, John Mackey, I think his name is, of Whole Foods at some point. But basically, Whole Foods has some really interesting policies that Amazon will probably change. For example, you can try anything at Whole Foods. You can just open packages and try it.
Really?
And
I didn't know that.
You can pick up an apple and take a bite and and
that's throw smart. This away. That's smart of them.
You can go to the bins. Absolutely. They will also, especially in the beer and wine section, if you want something, just ask and they'll start stocking it. We've gone there before and they have enormous, in Silicon Valley, they have, all the stores have really fantastic selections of beer.
To be fair, our local mom and pop store, Petaluma Market, will do that also.
Petaluma Market.
Petaluma Market is an example of a local, small, not a chain, that store that's competing well against Whole Foods on price and by offering service.
But Petaluma Market and Cotati Market also.
And Oliver's up in,
I meant Oliver's. Yeah, Oliver's Market. That's the one I meant.
Yeah.
Those are some of the best little grocery stores in California.
They're amazing.
Those are really, really good stores. But I think what Amazon could do is some version of that. Instead of stocking in perpetuity, well, probably the best grocery store in all of California is Rainbow Market in San Francisco.
Right.
And they will literally stock anything from anywhere. If they can get it, they will stock it.
Right.
If you just ask. That's bad business. And what Amazon could do is say, look, you have a kind of a obscure request. We'll just ship it to you for free. And we won't stock. I mean,
that's kind of how bookstores work these days.
Yeah, isn't it?
Right? Yeah. It's not on the shelf. I'm calling Amazon. Yeah.
So exactly. Another so
I think
that'll
Amazon
be,
looks at Whole Foods and thinks there's so much we could do to make this so much more efficient with combinations of delivery and pricing and inventory, and which Whole Foods just hasn't been doing.
Go ahead, Ed. I'm sorry, Stacey.
No, that's okay. And I would say also think about how Amazon prices things and how dynamic that can be. What will be interesting is if you think about inventory management in a grocery store with technology capabilities. So not necessarily people, but if you have cameras looking at your stock, you can say, hey, you know, we have an abundance of corn. This is terrible. Let's discount this.
Right.
And those kind of things should
flex
be fun.
Flex pricing. Yeah. Uber style. Surge pricing
on turkeys at Thanksgiving.
You know what's going to be sad? Whole Foods is a very good employer. They pay well. They give benefits. I don't know if that's going to continue. I think that was
Amazon
a good job.
Said they weren't going to change the Whole Foods culture. And they have a history of that look what they let Tony Hsieh do with Zappos.
No, Zappos, they didn't touch Zappos, did they? They gave them free reign.
Yeah, so they said they were going to do that too with Whole Foods on the employee side.
Good.
So
is this maybe just really because of Walmart? Walmart said we want to, you know, Walmart's terrified of Amazon, right? As they should be. And Walmart's going after Amazon. And so is that really what we're seeing is a Amazon versus Walmart?
You can't discount that.
Yeah.
Food is what is it, 20% of the budget?
Wow.
Yeah, it's a huge thing, but I really think it's Android versus iOS here, because I'm sure that what'll happen and what is already happening is that for the most part, Whole Foods is going after the high end of the market and Walmart is going after the low end of the market. That's true in terms of locations. That's true in terms of their pricing and what they emphasize. You can find organic food at Walmart, but the shoppers aren't primarily interested in premium organic foods, and the reverse is true at Whole Foods. So I think that they'll coexist and sort of battle it out on the margins. A couple of other things that come to mind, which Amazon could easily do. People think that they go to the store and they're like, oh, I can choose anything. I think I'll choose this. I think I'll choose that. But over a period of 3 or 4 years, it'd be trivially easy for a company like Amazon to say, you know what, every 3.5 months on average, you buy a carton of Häagen-Dazs coffee flavored ice cream. Why don't we just ship that to you every 3.5 months? Or, you know, they can tell you what the patterns are of what you buy. There's probably a lot of predictive capacity there. And also, They can do predictive stocking, knowing what everybody does. I mean, of course, Walmart is really, really good at this. If there's a, they check weather patterns. If there's a hurricane coming, they stuck off.
They're very data driven.
Up on all the things But there's another business that exists in sort of like popular among organic farmers and so on, which is that you can subscribe. I mean, there's lots of people do this in California. You can subscribe to get fresh produce delivered. And so you and they decide what the produce is. So
like a CSA?
You
say, you
know, yes, a CSA. So you get
if that's have, a that's a, one of those farm to table subscription services where you get a box every week of and they choose what's in the box.
Exactly. So they you could imagine an algorithmically determined set of meal kit delivery, delivery of food based on what how you actually do your shopping. Plus this kind of farm-to-table
I already am an Amazon Subscribe and Save customer. This is an Amazon service. I don't know how well-known it is, but you get 5 to 15% discounts by saying, well, I'm going to get that every 3 months. Just ship it to me. And that is something missing. I would love to see it no more. I'm constantly adjusting it because I know I got too many baggies now. You know?
Yeah.
And I'm constantly adjusting. It's a pain in the butt, although it's such a convenience that every month on the 19th, I get a big box, and they put it all in one box. Right. It's the biggest box you ever saw. I feel sorry for the mail carrier on my doorstep, and it's all the staples. And and it's not it's far from perfect, but it is. I'm already using it, and I think that that is a very natural thing for Amazon to expand into. One of the things Ben Thompson says is that Amazon likes Whole Foods' reliance on store brands, like you were mentioning, Stacey, the 365 brands. And in fact, one of the things I don't like about Whole Foods is I can't get our local milk brand there. They don't have all the brands. They're not big on variety. That's something Amazon likes, though.
Yes, because they can control pricing. They have all kinds of controls. I was also going to point out, because I do think this is worth noting in the greater Amazon Walmart battle for supremacy or being the man in the middle. Walmart has talked to some of its customers, some of its vendors and said, hey, get off AWS, the Amazon Web Services Cloud. So the Wall Street Journal had the story this morning and it actually ties into
really?
A couple of weeks ago. Yeah, that's I put it wild. In the rundown and then somebody also surfaced it in the chat. But a couple months ago, maybe it was actually about a month ago, one of the big logistics companies decided to go with Microsoft's Azure cloud because they didn't want, oh, it was Maersk, the shipping, M-A-E-R-S-K.
Yeah, they're the big container shipping company.
Yeah, they went with Azure instead of AWS because they were concerned about Amazon being a competitor of theirs in the distribution business.
Well, they're smart. Ultimately, Amazon is a competitor of every single retail businesses in the world, distribution business in the world.
It's true.
I loved it that Ben Thompson says Amazon's goal, this is the base mission statement, whether they say so or not, is take a cut of all economic activity. And what an amazing goal, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
true.
And why not? If you're Jeff Bezos, who's doing all right, I think I just saw an article that says he makes $1 million a day personally. Where else do you go? Well, I just want a bit. I just want a you know, a penny on every economic transaction that happens.
Food is a great part place. People always need to buy food.
And food is a really. I didn't realize, but now that I think about it, you're absolutely right. I didn't realize what a big chunk of our daily expenditures. One in 20% of our daily expenditures is food.
Yeah.
Also, if you're a big enough tech company, if you're Apple, Google, or Amazon, really what you're doing is your business is to build a better customer, to get customers to have certain habits and inclinations. I mean, Starbucks is the perfect example. They moved the world from a place where people bought coffee in a can and it was like, you know, and they made it with the Melitta filters or whatever, to a world where you stand in line for half an hour and spend $4.50 for your coffee. I mean, they transformed the behavior. They made a better user. And if you think about, if you're a Whole Foods customer and you're an Amazon Echo user and you're making dinner and it's like, oops, we forgot something. We need some butter. You are going to tell, and if that could be delivered within an hour, you would tell us, knowing that it comes from Whole Foods and Whole Foods knowing what brand you prefer, You would just tell us, I need some butter. Send it to me as soon as possible. The psychological knowledge that it's coming not through the mail system from some warehouse somewhere, but from the Whole Foods down the street is really going to get people to buy groceries. And if you're buying groceries and food all the time through us, you're being trained to buy things through us.
And okay, once you gotta stop saying your name, Mike.
I'm sorry. through the
Echo, just say
virtual
Echo.
Assistant that shall not be named, and clothes. I mean, you name it, and of course, all that stuff comes from Amazon. So, you know, I think a big part of this is how can we have a business and a compelling offering that will get people to be using this thing for actual purchases several times a week.
Right.
And I think this is a big thing toward that.
So this conversation has been great because I have completely now come around to the notion that we will be doing all of our grocery shopping online through Amazon in the next 5 years, that this is just going to happen.
Yep. Well, I'm going to tweak it. I know you want to get off this topic because we are not this week in Amazon.
Yes, we are. This is right down our alley.
So imagine. So, and this is what I did. I broke down food into the five kind of ways to think about how we eat, right, in our house and how Amazon will touch that. But with the Echo show, which comes out, you know, June 28th. So next week at this time, I should have an Echo show to be like, hello, we can talk on it, Leo. You can show Amazon, thanks to the data it's going to have about what produce is, I can be like, hey, this is what I have. And it will suggest recipes I can make. What I don't have. Yeah. Or it can order. And these things are going to be so seamless and so easy. It's just going to be, you won't go other places and it'll be great.
Well, that's a good point because it's convenience that's going to win it.
Well, it's not just convenience. It's also knowledge. Like, I mean, how often do you sit there and look in your fridge and you're like, well, crap, I've got this weird piece of fish and this vegetable I don't know what to do with it.
Right.
So.
So now I think
Amazon was surprised.
It's a good move. Buying Whole Foods is a good idea. I think we agree.
Oh, yeah.
At first, it's like, why would they want a grocery store?
Yeah. Because we think of Amazon as the alternative to brick and mortar, but of course, they've dashed that expectation long ago.
Well, but wait a minute. Really, have they? I mean, they do brick and mortar things. But ultimately, so the mission statement, which is to be the world's finest customer centric company, is really just here's how we get a piece of all economic activity by making it as easy as possible for our customers to use us.
I see there's two kinds of tech companies, and I think the quintessential examples are Apple and Google. So Apple companies are visionary companies. They work behind the scenes in secret to figure out what you want, and they chip away and chip away, and then they release it and like, this is what you want. Then there are companies like Google who are like, we don't know what you want. We don't know what anything's going to happen in the future. How about this? How about this? How about this? And they see what sticks to the wall. Amazon is a Google type of company. They have done so many experiments. Remember they had lockers in 7-Elevens where you could have things delivered and you go to the 7-Eleven.
They still have them.
They're working on drones. They're working on blimps. They're working on all kinds of delivery systems that they're buying their own airline. They don't have any idea how people are going to produce food. But one of the things they did learn in one of their experiments, which was the Amazon Echo, was they were surprised to find out that everybody puts the Amazon Echo in the kitchen and that the Amazon Echo was right from the start.
Yep.
And this isn't the Amazon device. Show, this Echo Show. This is the original Echo.
Yeah.
People are asking it for measurements. They're asking for timers. Yep. And they use it while they're cooking. They use it. Yep. It's a food thing. And they're like, wow, this is amazing.
That's a good point, because I don't know if they knew that that's where it would end up, but it is exactly where it started anyway. Now I have echoes everywhere, but it starts in the kitchen.
Yeah.
So somebody in the chat room said something interesting. We are addicted to convenience, and that's the other thing Amazon must have realized is that, while there are many considerations that you use to choose how your economic activity is executed, price, convenience, you know, brand, status. You know, remember the old, you know, conspicuous consumption. You show your economic status by what you buy and how you buy it. But more and more, convenience is going to trump that. I don't know why, because our lives are busier. Ooh, or go ahead.
I
why?
Can tell you.
Why,
I can tell Stacey? You. Because why? there's a new story. Okay, it's in Aon magazine. It is conspicuous consumption is over. It's all about intangibles.
I
now.
Saw that. Wasn't that interesting?
It was, but that is why this is. And so people are now buying convenience.
Because time, you realize time. That is the yes. most important thing. You can't get more of. You can always get right. more money. You can always, you know, but you can't get
but
more
I don't
time.
Think that's it. But I don't think that's it exactly. You mentioned we're addicted to convenience. We're addicted to addiction.
And that's true too.
To understand it. Yeah. We're not robots who are trying to extract the maximum value out of every minute. We're looking for things that feel good.
Yes.
We buy an iPhone because
yes.
it feels good.
Yes.
When you use the Amazon Echo and you ask so-and-so a question and you get an answer back, or you get a result, or you get a timer, or you get something delivered, or an Uber comes or whatever, it's not that you've done something efficient. It's that you've done something that releases dopamine
yeah.
into your brain.
Yeah.
And you're sitting there going, oh, my God, that feels so good.
We're all rats pressing the bar that gives us the food pellet.
That's it exactly.
Oh, that's even scarier. Because what we haven't talked about, we've talked about how this makes sense for Amazon. Oh, this is good business for Amazon. What we haven't talked about is the consequence to American consumers, which is ultimately that one company dominates economic activity. And I in my gut, that tells me that can't be good.
Yeah. No, I mean, people are already upset with Amazon for a variety of reasons. And things like dynamic pricing of groceries are really going to piss people off.
But they still shop. I mean, you know, there's all those sorts of reasons you can hate Amazon, but you still, it's not slowing their business down any.
Well, actually, so this will get into my pick. So this week's pick talks about some of this.
Okay, dun, well, so dun, you want to save it? You want to save it?
I will save it, or it's up to you. This way people listen all the way to the end.
So we talk a lot about big data, and we talk a lot about how we can use big data and so forth. But really, I think, Mike, you actually nailed it. The whole reason that you collect data, you put data in, you computerize stuff, you put stuff online, is because it's easier then to gamify, and it's easier then to maximize the pleasure principle and win by addicting people to your stuff. I mean,
yes.
Somebody was talking about, I heard a great interview. In fact, we're trying to get him on Triangulation, a guy who's talking about internet addiction. He said, look at World of Warcraft. What did Blizzard learn from World of Warcraft? Well, they have all this data on how much time people spend in the game, how much time they spend doing different things, and then they can optimize it. And what they found, for instance, was that people love to raid, but what they love about raiding is loot. So they made sure that all the raids provided a maximum amount of loot. In other words, they can tune the game in real time because of the data they're getting to make it more addictive. And he said in many ways, World of Warcraft is an example of how addictive this stuff can be. So addictive, people didn't eat. They didn't sleep. One guy in Korea never went to the bathroom. It was for days.
How does that work?
I think he died.
Oh.
Yeah. Now, maybe this is an apocryphal story. It probably is. But I think it rings true because you know people have done this.
Yeah.
And there are there are places people can go to get off World of Warcraft. Only because Blizzard was able to gamify, make it so addictive, so compelling. And is that ultimately what Amazon's trying to do?
Yes, absolutely. That's what everybody's trying to do, and it's a scary thing. I mean, basically, we are, as individuals, in a long-standing battle between things that are distracting and addictive and our own biology. And our own biology is not evolving very quickly. And everybody else, all these companies are trying to figure out how to get our attention, get our dollars, get our time, get our activity. And you see this in all industries. You see it in the food industry. Look at the fast food industry. The people who invent the latest Jack-in-the-Box burger sensation are scientists who have they're doing experiments with people to see what is the food combinations of salt, sugar, and whatever that will get people to just eats no matter what. And so the food keeps getting more addictive. The TV shows keep getting more addictive. And with the application of big data and AI, like you say, Leo, this is going to be, this is a serious problem. We really have to figure out how to not be those rats in this endless experiment. On the other hand, and this I'm paraphrasing something from Dilbert, the pellets are excellent.
John gave me this part of the confetti that came down during the John Waters Us and Then Them concert, Resist. And in fact, that's what a lot of Roger Waters stuff is, you know, comes from Neil Postman's, what is it called? Addicted to
Amusing Ourselves to
Amusing
Death.
Ourselves yeah. to Death. Mm-hmm. And Neil Postman recognized this decades ago.
Yeah.
And it was with television ultimately, but television was just the beginning of this.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, we were so innocent then. Yeah. And one of his theses was that people used to complain that television news is too much like entertainment. And his point was, no, it's television. It's entertainment. It shouldn't try to be substantive because it's television. It's got to be just pure entertainment. And we should never take television news seriously as a source of information. That seems like, you know, when you look at today's fake news,
innocent.
Those are the days when cable TV was the big threat.
Amusing Ourselves to Death came out in 1985, and we're now living here. We are 30 years later, living that for sure.
Tim Wu has a book out, a relatively new book out.
Yes, The Attention Merchant. So it's excellent.
You.
Excellent.
Yes.
Yeah. We interviewed Tim on Triangulation, and it's same idea.
Yes.
He says that's how the advertising industry began, and it's, yeah. But what has changed is computers, digital information, mm-hmm. big data, the ability to gather data and then churn it in a way that you can be so effective in doing this. So now we took something very positive, Amazon buying Whole Foods, and we've made it a grim, dark future for us all.
Our dystopian fantasy.
I don't mind. Is it possible that Jeff Bezos, he's a smart guy, he's read this book, says, but I'm going to make sure that, yes, even though I control all economic activity, I'm going to do it to the benefit of humankind. I think he's
sort of viewpoint, a libertarian streak that runs through all of technology,
Zuckerberg,
which is like you tell me that I'm responding to all these things that are addictive. So what you're saying is that all this technology is being applied to serving every desire that I have and giving me exactly what I want. That's the problem.
Right.
I mean, that's kind of Jeff Bezos' problem issue with you know, we talked about undercutting on pricing and stuff like that. He's like, hey, people come to Amazon because they save a lot of money on books because of the fast delivery. We're giving people what they want and we're benefiting literacy. And I don't know if he read that book about the addictive nature of all of this, but he certainly sold most of them.
Yeah. Yeah, in fact, where did I go to buy a copy? Damn you, Jeff Bezos. Yes. It's a really interesting world we're living in because what you have, I think, is a few very smart people who saw this and I think must have, maybe they did it instinctively without, explicitly thinking, or maybe not. Bezos strikes me as the kind of guy who, he was a hedge fund manager who suddenly kind of a light went on. He said, you know what's going to happen with all this? We're going to have perfect data. And we're going to be able to use it to make customers perfectly happy. And we are going to grab a piece of all economic activity. And that means he's already infinitely rich. I don't know what you could do unless that's, you know,
you read his shareholder letter.
That's his food pellet, right? Tell me about that. Because this was a good thing, right?
The shareholder letter?
People were saying good things about it.
Yeah, well, his big thing was like talking about how Amazon needs to grow. I mean, it was about going after billion-dollar markets, not small markets. And I'm trying to remember the other big things. The thing that struck me was the big markets. So there was not like a super good thing.
He says this is a question he got at an all-hands Jeff, what does a day two look like? That's a question I got at our most recent All Hands meeting.
Oh, that's right.
I've been reminding people that it's day one. It's been day one for a couple of decades. I work in an Amazon building named Day One, so he obviously was thinking about this. And when I moved buildings, I took the name with me. I spent time thinking about this topic. Day two is stasis, followed by irrelevance, followed by excruciating, painful decline, followed by death. And that is why it is always day one. And then he goes on to talk about true customer obsession. And I think he says, by far, obsessive customer focus is the most protective of day one vitality. Staying in day one requires you to experiment patiently. We've talked about that. All of these things that they're doing are very experimental. Accept failures, plant seeds, protect saplings, and double down when you see customer delight. A customer-obsessed culture best creates the conditions where all of that can happen. So customer-obsessed, now you might, Mike, say, well, that what that really means is obsessed with dopamine, with generating the maximum dopamine in our customers. So just another way of saying the same exact thing.
Yeah. I mean, how do you get people to do something different? Whatever the biochemical process is not really his concern. He's interested in the behavior. And I think, you know, Stacy's too young to remember that Amazon started all of this. I mean, I remember close to 20 years ago, Amazon was the first company to do algorithmic recommendations with books. And basically what they did, as I understood at the time, is they see that you bought a whole bunch of books and they see other people who bought the same group of books and some books you didn't buy. So they recommend to you the books you didn't buy. And I remember, you know, in 2000 or whenever this was that I was learning that Amazon was doing this as a matter of course, it was a mind blower. It's like, wow, that is brilliant. That's amazing. Well, that's what all business now is based on, that simple principle, although it's just getting a lot more sophisticated and a lot more focused in a lot more areas and ones that are less easy to sort of gamify, I guess, than books. But I really do think that Jeff Bezos, everybody says, yeah, he's a genius and all this stuff. He has his own space program. He owns the Washington Post, all that stuff. But he really is, I think, one of the most brilliant and most importantly, disciplined and focused tech CEOs in the industry. He's really, really, really smart and really, really ambitious.
Yeah, read the shareholder letter, because that, if you wonder how conscious is it, is it instinctive, is it planned? If you wonder that, you will read this, or Dogfight, which was a fabulous book about Amazon.
Mm. Yeah.
You will see immediately that this guy knows exactly what he's doing.
Yeah.
And sees, you know, as the great tech CEOs have, sees farther ahead than mere mortals and really is playing the game way in the future. He talks about, he says, day two companies make high quality decisions, but they make them slowly. If you want to be, you know, keep the energy and dynamism of day one, somehow you got to make high quality, high velocity decisions. That's easy for startups, very challenging for large organizations. So he really, this letter, he's giving you a peek under the hood of how he's doing what he's doing. He says, we use machine learning. Yeah, there's, you know, obvious visible ways, but really what machine learning is doing for us is making our operations more efficient, period. You know, in ways that are kind of more invisible. Good inventors and designers deeply understand their customer. They spend tremendous energy developing that intuition. They study and understand many anecdotes rather than only the averages you'll find on surveys. He's arguing against focus groups and things like that. They live with the design. You know, that could be Steve Jobs talking right there.
Yeah, dog fooding.
Really, this shareholder letter was very interesting. I'm glad you brought it up, because this was last month, and we didn't really spend any time with it, and I think that this is really interesting.
Ta-da!
Thank you. Let's take a break. Come back. We'll talk more Amazon, just one of the many topics we can cover on the show, because this show has no portfolio. We just talk about whatever the hell we want to talk about.
I thought you were going to say this show has no point, but that's it.
I'm looking over your shoulder, Stacey, at a book called Consent of the Networked.
Oh, yes. That's Rebecca McKinnon from a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
It's a good book.
Good stuff. See, she's smart. We got smart people. This show is our smartest show. bring in the smartest people. Mike Elgin is also here. His new enterprise that he's doing with his wife Amira is really cool. It's gastronomad.net.
Yes.
And the idea is really, I think, to finance your desire to travel and
exactly
and really build it on Amira's great cooking.
Yes, it's exactly that. And give us an excuse to find geniuses in the food space in all these different cities. Our first one's in Barcelona. We still have 4 spots open.
Good.
For Barcelona.
Oh, good.
Yeah, yeah. And so there's so step right up.
That's coming up September 12th through 17th.
Exactly. Do you have any tech components to that, Mike?
Not really.
Other than
the fact that we do a lot of the booking and sort of the interaction and things like that. But it's really, for the most part, so far, it's a very low tech thing. We find geniuses who are doing visionary things and who are good at teaching and that sort of thing, who are visionaries in terms of making cheese or whatever it is. And then we are just going to spend some quality time with those people just serially. Every day we're going to be just doing awesome food stuff in each place. So,
see, this is an example of experience, right?
Exactly.
That if Amazon takes all the economic activity, well, what's left? Providing amazing experiences. And just like that article that you read, Stacey, that's the new conspicuous consumption. It's not buying goods. It's right. Experiences.
And you know what's fascinating about this? And I learned this fairly recently. This whole idea of the experience economy, which is a big, big deal right now, this was actually foreseen by in the book Future Shock.
Alvin Toffler,
Yeah, 1971, Toffler said what would arise is something called an experiential industry.
Interesting.
And, he predicted the whole thing. And what he didn't predict was the degree to which the experience industry is being driven by Instagram and social media. So one of the takeaways that people get from doing amazing things is the photos they take of themselves doing it. And this is incredibly and I think that's it's especially relevant today because today is National Selfie Day, and I like to look at this this experiential economy as essentially being the selfie economy. It's selfie driven. It's photo and social media sharing driven behavior. Where people want to experience all these amazing things, and yes, they want to experience it. They want to be there in real life. But the thing that they take away, instead of buying something, they take away the social media reputation, the sort of like the success theater on Facebook, Instagram, and all the other social networks. And so these things are all connected: social media, selfies, and the experience economy. And it's I think it's going to become a multi-trillion-dollar economy.
Well, you know what's interesting is if you've used any, if you've been to a store lately, somebody in the chat room saying, last time I went to a sneaker shop in a mall, the employees kind of ignored me. They didn't really care. Nobody cared. It was a terrible experience. And I think we're all experiencing that lately, retail, brick and mortar, service economy is deteriorating. So which gives a bigger opening for this transition. We are, that's really what this show is about. If you're going to pick something this show's about, it's about how the world is changing, how technology is changing this world, and it's changing it dramatically. And sometimes, like a frog in a pot of boiling water, water about to boil, you don't really notice. So it's good to get out of the water and look around and say, wow, there's a shift happening.
No, yes. But you may not jump back in.
Well, let's hope you don't, actually. Let's hope you don't. And it doesn't matter if somebody's saying, yeah, like anybody cares about you on Amazon. That's not the point. And of course, they don't care about you. But they've created
care about your money.
They've created a system that takes care of you. That's all that matters.
It feels like they care about you.
It doesn't matter to me if they care about me, as long as I get taken care of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Our show today brought to you by LegalZoom. Here's somebody who's going to take care of your legal needs in order to run your own business. I could tell you this from deep experience. Attention to detail is critical. You mess up a contract, one legal misunderstanding and boom. And the law is tricky. The law is full of pitfalls and snares and loopholes. But fortunately, you're not alone. There's LegalZoom. Over a million Americans, and I include myself, have used LegalZoom. We've used LegalZoom for our wills. I use LegalZoom to incorporate or LLC TWIT, trademark stuff. This is how I started TWIT. But LegalZoom's services go well beyond business formation. They have a nation. This is something relatively new. They didn't have this when I used LegalZoom 12 years ago to start TWIT. They have now built a nationwide network of independent attorneys. So you can actually talk to an attorney and get legal answers to the day-to-day questions you have about your business. LegalZoom's not a law firm, though. Understand that. But what they've done is they have, without being billed by the hour, they've set you up with the kind of legal help you need from both human help and of course, the traditional LegalZoom forms and documents and all that stuff. Things like trademark, employment law, lease agreements, they're not designed by humans. They're designed by lawyers. And sometimes you need to lawyer up. But you can lawyer up with LegalZoom without being billed by the hour because they're not a law firm. Go to LegalZoom.com today and be sure to enter the code TWIG in the referral box. You'll get special savings at LegalZoom.com. LegalZoom.com. Don't forget the offer code TWIG. And we thank them not only for making the podcast possible, but for making TWIT possible. I love that phrase, lawyer up. I don't know why, but it just, you know, let's lawyer up here. All right, I don't know if Mike's passed out or disappeared or maybe just decided to run and get a beer. But
probably in France, it is wine, isn't it?
It's also late.
I know. I'm like, it's wine o'clock for sure.
It's wine o'clock for sure in France. So you just got back from Costa Rica. Was that wonderful?
It was. It was an experience, one of where I did not take a lot of selfies. So
I like going places where you can't get online.
I really, like yourself, though, the Amazon Whole Foods thing did pop through.
Yeah.
But for the most part, I was offline. And Costa Rica, the food has improved tremendously since I was last there 15 years ago. So I was really excited. It's like, yeah.
You can't be, I think people have realized, you cannot be a tourist destination without having good food. That's another thing that's changed, hasn't it?
Yes. Absolutely.
So did you go off and get a little glass of wine there, Mike? Or?
It's exactly what I did. Rosé, it's con. It's not a particularly elegant glass, but it's a lot. But.
Oh, well, that's a disguise. See, I had my husband bring me a topo because I was like, oh, all this discussion is parched.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned the food and the internet connection. I mean, we talked about this on TWIT a couple weeks ago, but when we went out into the Sahara in Morocco, and that was exactly the combination: zero internet connectivity and amazing food. And these were desert nomads, basically, providing all these services. And they were actually able to get an internet connection from the top of a nearby dune, but we didn't have any internet connectivity. And you're right, Leo, it was really fantastic.
I saw that picture you had of your guide holding his phone or his iPad, I think it was, up like that so he could get a little connection.
Yeah, and it was just barely squeaking by. But I remember when airplanes, business travel was a respite from, nobody can reach me, for the next 6 hours. And those days are gone. So now we have to work harder and harder to find a place where we simply can't be reached. And it is a luxury.
Yeah, it's also painful as hell.
Yeah.
And Lisa and I are both saying, I can't wait to get back to the internet. So it's one of those things where, you know.
Well, I noticed you posted all these 360 videos after you got back.
Oh, yeah, because I couldn't. There's nothing I could do with them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I used a Microsoft tool, which I'd never used before, but Mary Jo Foley on Windows Weekly had used it, and really to good effect on her travels. So I was looking for some way, and I'm going to use Google Photos also, because Google Photos has a way of making an album. And the nice thing about Google Photos is that I've given access to everybody in the family, so everybody who has pictures could put them in there, and then I can organize them in kind of a big family album. But I use this thing; it's part of Microsoft Office called Sway. I don't know if Microsoft publishes or promotes this very much, but it's a presentation tool. So on the left-hand side, you know, I'm putting together a slideshow with my pictures and text. And then what comes out of it is actually something you can embed in a website or you can share. And it's actually a really great way to share both text and experiences, you know, pictures and video too. Couldn't put 360s in it, which I was a little disappointed because I would love to be able to put 360s in it. But this is what's nice.
That looks amazing.
It works really well. But is this going to be online 20 years from now when I want to relive this? I doubt it. So I don't know.
You have to print your photo book.
Print a book. I think that's what I'm going to do is put in Google Photos, make a similar thing in Google Photos. Won't be quite as elegant, but I could at least print a book out of it, and then I'll have the book. But it was kind of fun, and I thought if I do this, I wanted to do it while I was on the trip so I would remember everything. But I thought if I do this soon enough, because I never do that. I always think I'm going to do this. I never do this.
Is that seal – I'm sorry, Leo, but this is an important question. Is that seal like about to eat a penguin, or is it yelling at a penguin?
Okay, this is my favorite – you picked my favorite picture. So – we're sailing around this little rock on a Zodiac boat, a little rubber. This is the Galapagos, and a rubber Zodiac boat. And the guide says, oh, look, that seal is doing something. So this seal, this is a sea lion. It's a California sea lion. It's exactly the same as we have in San Francisco, which is weird. And the bird on the right is something unique to the Galapagos called a flightless cormorant. It's the only cormorant that doesn't fly. It turns out it could fish perfectly well, and the smaller its wings, the better it fishes, so it just doesn't fly, has little wings. And the flightless cormorant is centering on the rock, and the seal has decided, no, that's my spot. So he's literally yelling at him. Lisa, actually, on her website, I should show you that, has the whole sequence. So he's using a dominance, technique that works great with other sea lions to convince...
Get off my rock.
But the cormorant's going, what the hell are you talking about? So Lisa got the picture. We're both standing next to each other in the boat, and I was so mad because I came home and I said, I got the best picture ever. And then she said, oh, yeah, I got that picture too. And hers is better because it's got sea spray in it. But anyway, isn't that funny? But so the seal ended up yelling and yelling, stopped yelling, and eventually just lay down next to the cormorant. He said, okay, fine, I'll share.
Fine.
So I think this is a lesson for us all, isn't it? You know, a little less yelling, a little more just coexisting.
Accepting. Sorry, I know you were making another point, but
that's the power of the sway, right? It grabs
We should
you.
All try to evolve.
We should all try to evolve. We should all just get along. And I figure I could probably sell this picture for a stock photos. Because I'm sure there's plenty of people who'd use it in a presentation like, stop yelling and start listening. And I mean, I just think there's opportunities, but I probably won't. It's just going to be up on the sway. But yeah, that was a photographic delight, I'll tell you. Have you been to the Galapagos?
I haven't.
Yeah.
I have not.
Oh, it's so much fun.
I haven't even been to Costa Rica yet.
I haven't been to Costa Rica either. I'd like to go there.
I've been to every other Central American country except for Costa Rica and Panama, but it's definitely on the list.
Yeah. We had a wonderful time. It's the Galapagos is pretty amazing.
Yeah. Aww. Yeah.
Aww.
It's a glimpse. It's like, I'm just coyly looking at
hello.
You.
Hello. You're looking. You are. Hello.
It's a dog mermaid.
There you go.
Yeah, that was the picture when I took it. I said, that's the picture of the trip. And then Lisa got a better one. Gosh darn it. She's a very good photographer. It's really fun to go out on trips with Lisa because we both take our cameras and this is whale hunting. I shouldn't say hunting. We were not trying to kill them. We're just looking for them. We did eventually find them.
My secret, Leo, maybe you can use the secret. Amir is a better photographer than I am. And so when I take pictures, I take them from Amira. I just simply go into her Google.
May I have your pictures, please?
Post the pictures she took and take full credit for it. It works great.
You're a smart man. Anyway, yeah, I was pleased. This is a Microsoft tool, but it has that big problem, which is it's hosted by Microsoft. It's on Microsoft's site. It like any product, is, you know, Google products too, if they decide not to support it, then all of this work is for naught. But at least for now, it's something you can do. That's a tip. There's a little tool, a little tip for you, sway.com. It's free. Mm-hmm. But not so good if you're not, if you have no internet connectivity, because it's, you know, you, there's nothing you can do offline with it. You just have to, you have to be online.
Yeah,
Austin had a little, as we've talked about before, fight with the folks at Lyft and Uber. Mm-hmm. And I know the motto is don't mess with Texas, but it turns out if you mess with Texas and you have enough money and enough legislators in your pocket, you can win. Well, Uber, Uber and Lyft went around. They did the old Texas reach around.
Well, so...
and spent...
I don't think that's what it is.
I do not think that means what you think it means. They spent $2.5 million, 40 lobbyists... And they got the state legislature to overturn, right? Isn't that what they did?
Okay. So there's a couple things here. Yes, that did happen. They spent $9 million.
Wow.
in our mayoral.
And then there was a proposition, election. Right, that they wanted.
Yeah, that was the one they spent.
Prop 1 they wanted to overturn. So, and by the way, the way they did it was sleazy as hell. Because
yes.
What they said in the campaign against Proposition 1, it's a ballot initiative, was, oh, no, fingerprinting's fine, but who pays for that? Are you going to pay for that? And Austin never said that taxpayers would pay for it.
Okay, this is why they got voted. This is why that was voted down, is because Austin was so pissed at the amount of money they spent, the way they ran the campaign, and the fact that they were like, just, they had written their legislation and Austin was trying to compromise with them. And they were like, nope, this is what we want. And we're going to fight for it.
The at issue was the right to do to fingerprint and do background checks on Uber and Lyft drivers.
Right.
And which, Uber and Lyft said no for reasons I don't fully understand. Why wouldn't you want background checks on your drivers?
Because it costs money and it creates friction. And friction is bad for web-based businesses trying to move things in the real world.
I kind of get the feeling that they want to hire drivers that might not pass a background check.
I think they just don't want to worry about it, and they don't want to be responsible for it. Like, the more responsibility, and this was it, Austin, when they did it, was a test case for them. This was a big deal for them. They were like going to prove that they could win.
They had to do that because, I mean, obviously $10 million is more than the fingerprinting would have cost. But this was more on principle.
Yes. So, but what? So the Texas legislature came in, and what they did was.
Well, so
also,
first we should say Prop 1 failed. Uber and Lyft both said, if Prop 1 fails, we're out of here. And so at South By, there was no Uber, there was no Lyft, there were only local ride sharing companies and the local taxi companies.
Yes. So what happened now is they went to the Texas legislature, and the Texas legislature hates Austin because we are a bastion of liberalism.
The People's Republic of Austin.
Yes. In Austin was already, the legislature was pissy at us and, you know, inner city Houston and some other places for declaring themselves sanctuary cities.
Oh.
And so, and they're mad at us for a bunch of other things. And so finally they were like, you know what? We're going to override local legislations. And that's the rule that passed in the legislature, is basically like, I mean, you hear the Republicans and they're all about quote unquote states' rights and blah, blah, blah. Well, they basically kind of did that to Austin and declared that the state gets to decide some of our governance issues.
Right.
Not a fan.
Yeah. So Uber and Lyft are back?
We're back. They're back. Well, let's see if Lyft is back. Uber is back.
You know,
and Uber, you know, we still had Uber Eats in town, so they never like abandoned it totally. But yes.
Well, you know who's not back? Travis Kalanick.
Yes.
That's the other big story of the week, which broke yesterday. I had read while we were away that Travis was going to take a leave of absence of a few months while they got it together, because Jeff Holder, who was investigating all these allegations. Really, Susan Fowler can take credit for ousting Kalanick, I think.
I mean, is he really ousted?
He was on a leave of absence. Now he says, I resign. He says the board.
He resigned as CEO, but he's still the chairman of the board and the biggest shareholder.
He did say, though, that the board would basically force him out. Yeah, but that means he's not there for day-to-day operations, right?
Correct. He, basically, if you follow HBO Silicon Valley, he just did what Gavin Newsom just did. He called
Gavin,
Richard on the
Gavin
phone.
Gavin Belson.
Said, I'm leaving. Belson, yeah. Gavin Belson, yes.
Gavin Newsom. He's Lieutenant Governor of California. Yeah, similar Lieutenant, name, though.
And future governor.
But
yeah, he got on an airplane and went to Tibet or something. But he's still pretty much in charge of the company, more or less. He's just got a better life because he doesn't have to show up for work every day.
Well, this can happen, though, if you're a publicly held company or you've got an independent board. Uber's not publicly held, but if you've got an independent board, they can force you out. So even though he founded the company and, you know, I think gets some credit for building a behemoth, a unicorn, even though it never makes any money.
Yeah.
It turns out it was the investors. Yesterday, five of Uber's major investors, this is according to the New York Times, demanded that Kalanick resign immediately. That includes Benchmark Capital. They deliver this letter. And even though you're the founder and the CEO, you can't ignore that. And so he's after long discussions with some of the investors, the Times write, he agreed to step down.
So let me ask you a high-level question, Leo, which is that they entered this space. They wanted to disrupt essentially the taxi industry and, in the long term, the car ownership idea by providing this model whereby there would be an app-driven, flexible employment-based ride-sharing service thing. And they're going up against, you know, transportation giants, big taxi companies.
Incumbents.
Incumbents.
That's the word you hate if you're a startup, is the guys who are already there and don't want to be disrupted.
And in order to do that, Uber... basically, their approach to dealing with that fact is just to be bare knuckles, lie, cheat, steal, be a bunch of jerks, abrasive, brush off the law, brush off whatever, track people. I mean, just they were just a hardcore company. And
you can make the argument they had to be because they were fighting taxi medallion owners in the taxi commission.
Would they have succeeded if they would have played nice?
Oh, no.
No, I think they had to be pugnacious.
I mean, look at what happened with Juno, which was the, hey, let's be nice to drivers, let's follow the laws. They just got bought by somebody.
I don't even remember them. Who are they?
Juno?
Is that another ride sharing?
Yeah, ride sharing. It was in New York City, mostly. Funny.
But this is also Juno. A very competitive space, right? So it wasn't merely that you're fighting the taxi commission. You're also fighting Lyft and Juno and everybody else. But he did, yeah. I mean, I don't know enough about the inside to know if he created the bro culture that was such a problem, but.
Oh yeah, dude, he was such a libertarian bro dude. I mean, did you read the memo that he had sent out about, like, hey, don't have sex with your coworkers, please, you know, don't vomit in the.
Yeah, he had party rules, Uber's party rules.
I mean, I've worked for startups and it's really easy, and I've worked for good people and I've worked for bad people. And I've had a boss who would, you know, have meetings at strip clubs and show people porn on their phone. And that was a very different environment than, you know,
not good.
Ohm, who was just a stellar person who, like, when someone said something stupid, he'd just turn to them and be like, that's dumb. Get out of here.
Good for Ohm. You're talking about Giga Ohm and Ohm Malik, of course.
Yes. Yeah.
This letter came out in 2013. It's called the Miami Letter, a saucy rule book. This is from Recode for the 400 employees at the company who were headed to Florida's Shore Club for what was a party focused celebration of the car hailing company's success. Titled Urgent, Urgent. This is all in caps. Read this now or else. You better read this or I will kick your ass, says Travis Kalanick 4 years ago. Have a great effing time. This is a celebration. Miami's transportation sucks butt. I have to bowdlerize it so I can. He says there's a $200 puke charge if you vomit. No throwing beer kegs off buildings. No fornication. It says do not have sex with another employee unless. A, you have asked that person for that privilege and they have responded with an emphatic, yes, I will have sex with you. That's good advice. And B, the two or more of you do not work in the same chain of command. Yes, that means Travis will be celibate on this trip. Hashtag CEO life, hashtag FML. Boy, that is bro culture. Wow.
See, I mean, like, that's not a memo that...
He said he was proud of the letter and spoke to his team about it often.
Yeah.
He's a douchebag.
Okay, so you can fairly blame him for the culture.
Yeah, and it has to be, you know, to follow up on my previous question, there's no business benefit to that kind of stuff.
Well,
to sexism.
Maybe not, but maybe there is because, well, for instance, if you lead a sales team of young guys, as I think you both know, that's the kind of thing that works with them to get them pumped and motivated and rah-rah. And if you've ever been to a sales meeting, Mike, you're an editor-in-chief. You know what those meetings were like.
Why is your sales team young guys?
I mean, well, that's right. That's changed, fortunately, I think.
Yeah. And so I think that, you know, if he was a visionary, if he was Jeff Bezos and calculated that you need to be bare knuckles and really push the limits in terms of laws and in terms of unions and in terms of all the rest, that's one thing. This is a guy who's kind of out of control, who's kind of like has a frat house mentality and is doing lots of things and saying lots of things and creating a culture that is not conducive to long-term success. Now, I know lots and lots of companies that started out like this. They're clueless geeks. They don't really understand. They don't have a lot of experience interacting with the opposite sex.
If you're just out of college, you're 22 years old.
Or whatever. But they change. But before they get as, you know, Uber's like a super unicorn. They're a decacorn or whatever it is. You know, before they get anywhere near that big, they have to change and become a company that respects people and has a fundamental decency about them and has a certain level of professionalism about them. I'm talking, you know, when you transition from a 10-person shop to a 20-person shop, by the time you get to that 20-person shop, you should not be talking like a frat boy anymore.
His investors let that happen. And part of the reason they let that happen is because Silicon Valley is both a male-dominated and also a really youthful culture.
Right.
So, I mean, even I, when I was younger, I mean, okay, some of this I would not have respected, but, you know, I'd be like, yeah, party. And now, you know, I'm like, oh, I can't believe I even sent some of those emails or talked to people like that who were my bosses. I'm like, what?
You know, we had a really good triangulation. I actually wasn't the hostess when I was on vacation, but I just listened to it on June 5th with a guy, Russ Laraway, who runs a company. Really, it's kind of he does a podcast and runs a company called Candor Incorporated. It's a management training company, but it's well worth a listen because he started out at the age of 22. He was a second lieutenant in the Marine Corps, and which meant, he says, I was in charge of 14 guys. And he learned lessons of leadership, which, by the way, one of the temptations would be like, be that rah-rah, you know, guy, put a bag on it, it's okay if you don't get caught kind of guy. But he didn't. And the Marine Corps encouraged him not to be. And he learned leadership lessons, then went on to Google and learn more leader, and that I think well-run companies, and the Marine Corps is very well-run, has to be, or wouldn't succeed as a military operation, learn that there are ways that are successful to run groups of organizations of people and ways that are not successful. We listened to the interview because it's really interesting, and it taught me what a lousy manager I am. But So you might say, oh, it's, you know, that's how Uber was. You don't like it. Don't work there. But I think it's not good business. And I think the board is right. And I think the investors are right to say that's not going to be good in the long run. That's not how you manage. You can't manage a team that way. It won't work.
Well, they didn't wake up to that.
Yes, they took their time. And that's why Travis Kalanick is on the beach. It's a very nice beach.
Yeah.
Girls in string bikinis giving him margaritas, but it's not the beach that the investors want him to be on. And it all started with this. And I have to give credit to Susan J. Fowler. And, you know, I was just looking at this. This was in February. This was only 4 months ago. She wrote this blog post about her treatment. And wasn't this the trumpet
straw that broke.
It was even more than that. It was the straw that broke, but it was also the thing that woke everybody up, and they said, this cannot continue. That's when they hired Jeffrey Holder. They began the investigation. That's when Arianna Huffington got involved. People mocked Susan Fowler, I think. We talked about this when it came out.
We did not mock Susan Fowler.
In fact, we said what a big problem this was for Uber. I don't think anybody expected that this would topple Travis Kalanick, but it did. No question in my mind, this did. And rightly so.
Yeah.
Can Uber be saved?
Yes. Millions of people use it.
It's a great business.
Well, is it? It's not profitable.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, really, the reason it's a decacorn is not because of the ride sharing business, but the future of autonomous vehicles. Although they're having trouble there, right? They had to fire Lewandowski because he stole intellectual property from Google.
But in general, I think the smart money is on the future of transportation. Is that the majority of people in most, especially in cities, will conjure up a self-driving car with an app, and it will take them wherever, and it should be very efficient and cost-effective. It should transform human culture in all kinds of positive ways. We can transform, all these parking lots can go away. So many good things can happen out of this. And Uber is right there on the most direct trajectory toward that future. And so they should, whether they're profitable today or not, they should be on their way to becoming the future of individual personal transportation. And I think they can be saved, but it's going to require radical cultural change. They're going to have to do more than they're already doing, more than just getting rid of Kalanick, more than adding more women to the board. But it can and should be saved. And look, nobody's on the right track really with self-driving cars. It's an open field. Anybody could own this future. But I think what we do know is that it looks a lot like Uber minus the driver.
Well, but that's right. And so people are talking about this. I mean, the chat room says Uber has a 3 years runway. That means they have enough cash to survive at their current burn rate, their current cost for 3 more years. But all they have to really do is get to the point where they can get rid of drivers. Because that's, right? I mean, is that why they lose money? Because the drivers, they don't pay drivers that well.
I don't know why. Maybe it's their lobbying expenses.
Yeah.
There's a slight difference between what people are willing to pay and what it costs to make them profitable. It's a pretty slight difference.
All of those
dynamics could change in the future. If people are not buying, if the drivers are not buying gasoline, for example, they're driving electric cars. You know, all kinds of things, you know, who knows what will happen with inflation or whatever. I mean, they're in the ballpark of being a thriving, profitable business. And, you know, if I were them, 3 years runway is... it's probably two more years than they really need at this point. You don't know what's going to happen in the future, but they should be on their way to succeeding. It looks to me like I think this reputation they're getting is probably the best thing that ever happened to Lyft, and and there could be a swap. I mean, usually the companies that are the first movers in any sort of industry are the ones you never have heard about later on. It's the latecomers that come in and take over and really succeed. So, you know, who knows? And really, ultimately, who cares if Uber as a company is the one that dominates the future of personal transportation? What matters is the model. What matters is the idea that you don't have to own a car, that self-driving cars can run around and improve safety and all the rest. That's really what matters. I mean, whether itself lives or dies, I don't know why anybody would care.
I would say the vision isn't what matters. It's figuring out the right metric to measure for success for self-driving cars. Because we don't actually, we understand the profit and loss drivers for a taxi business. We understand what network effects do for an online internet business. What we don't know is how we're going to measure, like, what are the defining metrics for getting people to get in your self-driving cars and pay you money. Like, is it going to be, you know, is gas going to be the issue? There's so many things. Is it electric cars? Is it going to be, you know, the capital costs of buying X number of vehicles to cover a city? What does that even look like? Who gets the best? Is it going to be in your algorithms that help you allocate those cars most efficiently? Like, to me, there are so many unknowns right now because we're in an inflection point, not just around the technology itself, like the self-driving cars, but also how we're going to power those cars, how we're going to build the data to drive the cars to where they need to be. I mean, that's what makes it exciting and also terrifying.
Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead, Leo.
Now there's enough latency that we're like Alphonse. According to the Financial Times, Uber passengers only pay about 41% of the cost of their trips.
Wow, that's ridiculous.
So that's why Uber doesn't make money. They're subsidizing almost 60% of the ride. And yet Uber's not cheap. Uber's more than a taxi. Why is Uber so much more?
No, it's not. No, it's Uber's not more than a taxi.
Oh, I thought it was.
Well, I don't know where you're taking taxis.
It depends.
Yeah. Isn't this conversation very interesting? It's almost like the conversation we had about Amazon, but 10 years before, right?
Yeah.
Uber's trying to do to transportation what Amazon's trying to do to grocery stores, you know?
Screw them. Basically.
No, provide so much convenience that customers just say Uber. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Uber is cheap enough that I told my daughter, you don't need a car. It's cheaper for me, you know, to not buy you a car, pay for gas and pay for insurance. It's cheaper for me to pay for your Uber rides.
Yeah. And I tell you, as somebody, I mean, we travel all over the world and we go to places where there is no Uber and we go to places where there is an Uber. And when we travel abroad, of course, we leave our Prius back in Silicon Valley, but we're sort of entering into the future because we're living without car ownership, essentially. And it's hell when there isn't Uber or any sort of ride-sharing service. When we're in Mexico City, which does have Uber, it's a godsend to be able to conjure up an Uber. Because Mexico City is like a country. It's a city that's so large that it's like a nation.
Right.
And it can be dangerous, and you can find yourself on some dark street, and there aren't going to be taxis happening by. Whereas you can just call an Uber, they're there in 2 minutes. It's a brand new car in every case that we took. A courteous driver. Take you exactly where you want to go, cost nothing, just fantastic. And then we go to Barcelona, which has banned Ubers. And now we're back. We feel like the Flintstones. We're trying to find a taxi, trying to hail them. Oops, they're full of people. Oh, there's another one. No, they're full of people. I mean, it's barbaric, really, trying to deal with taxis when you go from city to city and it's like no Uber, Uber, no Uber, Uber. You realize that the whole model of Uber and Lyft is just vastly superior from a convenience, safety, and every other standpoint. Cost. I mean, it's just fantastic.
But part of that is because they're subsidizing it, right? If you had to pay the other 60% of that cost, would you still think that way? I guess you would.
Well, in cities like San Francisco, I probably wouldn't want to pay the full cost. But I mean, Mexico City, we went across the city and it was like a 45-minute drive that cost $3.
What?
I'd happily pay $8.
Yeah.
You know, $10, $12.
Yes.
I mean, it's really nothing. And so it really depends on the local economy. You know, in San Francisco, everything is way too expensive. Avocado toast is $5. Right. I mean, everything is way overpriced.
Right.
And I definitely don't want to pay the full price.
By the way, where can you get avocado toast for $5? Because that's a great deal.
Yeah, right. Mexico City.
Leo, I'll make you some avocado toast.
Avocado toast. Actually, we don't have to have avocado toast. We've got snacks. It's time for, you've all been so good, it's time for Nature Box. Our Nature Box, I should make this like a feature of the show. It's our Nature Box snack of the week. Let's see somebody's been in my Nature Box. What the hell? There's only one snack left.
Avocado toasties.
Who's been stealing my snacks? Well, this is a testament to how good Nature Box is. Nature Box delivers the best tasting snacks you've ever had direct to you. No minimum purchase required. You can cancel any time. You can order as much as you want, as often as you want. And they have over 100 amazing snacks to choose from. By the way, these are not junk food. This is good food. Sweet, savory, spicy. You choose the snacks you like. And if you ever get a snack you don't like, they will replace it for free. Big Island pineapple. I mean, that's as simple as you can get. There it is up in the left coast.
Mini Belgian waffles.
Oh, those are great. You ever had those?
Okay, Leo, you keep threatening to send me one of these.
Oh, can we please make a note of that? Send Stacy a Nature Box. You're going to want more. It's amazing. Look at all these snacks. Yeah, there they are. Mini Belgian waffles. And the thing is, these are made as if you were making them with good ingredients. Never any artificial flavors, artificial colors. It is good stuff. You'll be happy. And most of the bags are resealable, so you don't have to eat the whole. They're very healthy size bags, but you don't have to eat
the whole thing.
I know. Those. Oh, man. Like, look at this stuff. So the only thing left for me, this is so mad. I usually have a full box. Crunchy barbecue twists, sweet and smoky barbecue seasoned lentil flour twists. I don't know. That's because they're gluten-free, right? Because they have snacks for a variety of dietary needs. So I guess lentils, no gluten. Oh, they're so cute. Mmm. Wow. Lentils never tasted so good.
I was going to say, what would happen if you didn't enjoy it, Leo? That particular snack.
What kind of ad would this be if I... Oh! That's terrible.
That's terrible barbecue.
Because you can get a new one for free, right?
There you go.
Whole wheat raspberry figgy bars. That was Sarah Lane. Oh, no, wait a minute. She would do the yogurt pretzels, and they would be gone. Like, we'd get the Nature Box. We get several Nature Boxes a month for our staff. They would be gone the day they came. Like, she'd just take them. She said, I love these, and eat the whole thing. New snacks each month, too. You never get bored, inspired by your feedback. So you tell them what you like, what you don't like. These actually are great. Nature Box. Mmm. Right now, 50% off your first order when you go to naturebox.com/twit. Mmm. Nature Box. Oh, that's what happened? Did Calacanis take him? Son of a... So I was on vacation and Jason Calacanis hosted Twit on Sunday. Did he do
it? Raided your Nature Box.
I think he took all my Nature Box. Damn you, Calacanis! Nature Box. Well, we can always get more. We'll get you some, Stacey, I promise. Naturebox.com/twit for 50% off your first order. And we thank Nature Box for keeping our team happy and supporting our shows. Mmm. That would be a funny ad, wouldn't it? If I like went.
Oh, no. Not these.
Hasn't happened yet. Mmm. I wish I could send these over the Skype.
I do too, because, you know, it's like 5:30.
All right, let's wrap it up. You always get hungry at the end of the show.
Before we wrap it up, Leo, I think I have an idea for you for your future Nature Box ads. You should put a secret camera in the cabinet. I know all the Nature
Boxes are stealing the cabinet.
Yeah, first of all, you can catch Calacanis in the act, but more importantly, you can show the employees like going through and you find the fig bars.
Oh, those
are gone in like 30 seconds.
Good.
I mean, and find out.
Well, you remember that, Mike? I mean, we had Nature Box in during your tenure.
I used to steal them. I used to take the whole bag. Take the whole bag.
I got just the camera for you. Get a Blink. They're cheap. They're battery powered, and it just takes a picture. And you should have all of that.
Hey, I want to say you call me a doofus for ordering those Nest cams.
Oh, that's because there's a better camera.
Well, they haven't come yet, anyway. But I got the Nest outdoor cam, and I love it. And even while I'm in Peru, in Ecuador, if there's motion in your backyard, I can see the cats. In the middle of the night, the cats are wandering around. It's kind of fun.
Wait. So in Machu Picchu, you're sitting there watching real-time live cat videos.
Yeah. It's depressing, isn't it? Oh, I want to give you an update, too. One of the things I said I was excited about going back to Machu Picchu, because I've been there. I was there 5 years ago, and at the time, I was the four-square mayor of Machu Picchu. Somebody took it away from me a few months later, but I just thought the idea of being the mayor of Machu Picchu was pretty cool. I couldn't get it back. They changed the rules or something, swarm. As I'm leaving, it says, you're 2 days away from becoming the mayor. It's like, I can't.
What?
2 days. Is that close?
Change my flight.
Almost. I was almost did that. Then I realized this is dopey.
You have been gamified, Leo. You have been gamified.
There, that shows you, doesn't it? Wow. There's so much more we could talk about, but I don't want, you know, Stacey's faint.
I mean, I'm not faint. It's just Mike's we drunk. Always do the.
He's had a glass of wine, big glass of wine. No, he's not.
Stacey's not faint.
And you're not drunk. Or maybe you.
I didn't say that.
Let's get our picks of the week. By the way, I went onto the rundown to see what Stacey's would be, and it says Stacey's really tired today.
It's true.
Why are you really
that's
tired?
A thing.
I came back from Costa Rica over the weekend, and my AC was broken.
Oh, no.
And that was drama. And then I had to travel to San Antonio for a couple days, and then I just got back. So I'm just like...
Isn't, though, Costa Rica roughly in the same time zone as you?
Oh, they don't do daylight savings time, so it was an hour later, but yes.
It's not jet lag, in other words.
No. It's just that vacation hangover where you're like, it was a very active vacation. Lots of
surfing. Were you sad to come home? Was that sad?
No, it was actually really nice because I'm not a beach lady and what? I was kind of sick of sand and
really you don't sun. you like educational vacations or sightseeing.
I like mountains.
Yeah.
Like snow.
I love the beach, but I agree with you. Sometimes sitting on the beach is boring after a few days. It's like
okay. Yeah. I mean I don't sit, so that was okay. But it was, you know, humid.
Yeah.
Not that Texas is any.
Well, did your daughter enjoy it?
Oh my God, yes. And I had fun. It's not that I didn't enjoy it. I just was ready to come home.
Yeah.
So
hang out around Lake Austin instead.
Yes.
But you weren't.
I wasn't what?
I was going to say, you're not too tired to have a pick for us, though.
I have a pick for you. I remembered it because I'm only halfway through it. So it may take a twist for the worst. Oh, I lost it.
I have it here.
It's called Radical. Okay, good. I was like, I lost my window.
I have it here.
Okay. Radical Technologies, the design of everyday life. And what this is a, I don't know what this guy used to do. He's a designer, Adam Greenfield. He wrote about what the Internet of Things, specifically tied to smart cities, will mean for people. So what does it mean when all of your data is collected and shared and analyzed? So some of the things we're talking about, like how will cities influence us to behave differently? How will corporate entities use that data to influence us? So it's a very kind of dark and dystopian vision. I'm not sure I buy into all of it, but it is a nice kind of critical view over what life is heading towards and might be. So if you're into that sort of thing, it's a nice book.
It's kind of along the lines of what we were talking about, right?
Yes, that's why I was like, oh, hey, my pick's going to work here.
Yeah, Radical. Oh, you mentioned that. That's right. Radical Technologies, the Design of Everyday Life, Adam Greenfield. And, of course, you can get it from Amazon faster than anywhere else. You can have it right now.
I had it downloaded to my Kindle because it came out Monday, and I was already in Costa Rica, and I was on the home Wi-Fi.
It
appeared.
You see, convenience is everything. Like, another bookstore bites the dust because of you.
Yes. It was all me right there. All of my Amazon book purchases.
I think convenience really does often trump good sense. You know, we want bookstores. We want independent bookstores, but they don't have the book. And who wants to carry a book all the way to Costa Rica anyway?
Well, I was going to say it's primarily like, I remember I traveled to Japan back in like 2000 in the flight. I brought along Gene Wolfe's science fiction. I can't remember what it was called, but they're like four big books or three big books. I brought all of them because it was like a 6.5-hour flight.
Yeah, I brought
and
the
then I think I,
Stephen King's The Stand, which is this thick to Mexico. But the night,
yes.
But as I'm reading it, I just tear the part that I've read off and throw it away, so the book gets thinner and it's less to carry.
I abandon them, so I'm like, well, that was done.
Yeah, leave it there. Many good hotels have battered paperbacks for trade.
So yes.
Good. Thank you. That's a great pick. Mike, do you got a pick for us?
I got a number.
The number is
18. 18 is the number of badges the Girl Scouts of America are introducing around cybersecurity next year.
What?
18 cybersecurity badges.
That is so awesome.
Girl Scouts. The Girl Scouts are going to learn about online safety, internet safety. They're going to learn about all kind. You know, there's going to be a whole progression up through the older girls to learn about serious cybersecurity, what it's all about, get into some serious counter hacking and stuff like that. And it's a brilliant initiative they're doing with Palo Alto Networks, which I believe is a Canadian company, that cybersecurity company. But yeah, they're getting serious about cybersecurity. I think this is fantastic. It's all good. The only thing I'm concerned about is I'm afraid that in the future, Girl Scout cookies will be something they drop in your browser.
Wow. Were you a Girl Scout, Stacey?
Okay, guys, I was not only a Girl Scout, but when I lived in New York as a young adult, I was also an assistant troop leader.
Oh, that's great. Go Girl Scouts. That is a great idea.
Yes, it is.
They'll also be able to explore opportunities in STEM, develop problem-solving and leadership skills to earn their badges, cybersecurity badges. Well, I wish I had some, but you guys had such uplifting picks. My pick is not quite so uplifting.
Oh, mine is not uplifting. If you read it, you're going to be like, oh, crap, we're all doomed.
But somebody told me if you search for spinner in Google, you know, those fidget spinners. Oh, look, you get a spinner. You don't need to buy a fidget spinner.
Oh, look at that.
Google's got, and they can change it to a number wheel in case. In fact, if you're really a nerd and you don't have your 20-sided die lying around, you could just spin the magic number wheel.
Wow. Ooh, that would be a good Amazon Echo skill.
I think it is. They have a 20-sided.
Roll.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have, roll my 20-sided die.
Yeah, they have they have those.
All right.
This is the dopiest.
It's literally an online fidget spinner is literally the only thing dumber than an actual fidget spinner.
Can you change the color? That would be my feedback.
You don't like the aquamarine kind of
yellow? No.
Oh, you don't like the yellow part?
Well, I feel like I would like some other options. Like orange would be good for me.
No, doesn't look like you can.
No.
It's a pretty good spinner, though.
It's lovely.
Well, there you go.
We'll have too much time on our hands.
Yep. ladies and gentlemen, this concludes this edition. And by the way, there's still some crunchy barbecue twists left if anybody is hungry. This week in Google, Stacey Higginbotham covers the Internet of Things. On her podcast, Stacey on IoT is her blog, stacyoniot.com, and iotpodcast.com is her podcast with Kevin Toefel. How's Kevin these days?
He's great. He's hanging. Kevin. We're getting him to build. He's playing with some fun Twilio apps, so we're going to have a call-in number.
Twilio's interesting. Yeah, I have a Twilio account. It's really interesting what you could do with that. It's basically phone services.
Mm-hmm. I did my own conference line, and I still have it, actually.
Yeah.
So you can call and it's like, welcome to Stacey's conference line.
Oh, that's really a neat idea. How much does that cost you?
Oh, pennies, man. Pennies. It's ridiculously cheap. And if you just, you can just Google how to build one.
SMS with it and all kinds of stuff. Twilio's really an interesting business.
Huh. Although 40% of their business comes from Uber, I believe.
What?
And Uber said, this was like a big thing in their earnings. All right, now hold on. Don't quote me yet.
What?
Twilio, Uber. Twilio's stock plummets as major client Uber distances itself.
Oh, no. Come on, Twilio.
Yes.
Mike Elgin is in Cannes in France on the Riviera right now.
That is correct. That is correct. And I've got this show all week, Cannes Lion. And after that, we're going to live here for 2 more weeks and just live the French Riviera life. And it's going to be really awesome.
Nice. Wonderful.
I was going to say, let me correct. It's not 40%. It's 12%.
Okay, oh, still a big chunk.
Still chunk.
Gastronomad.net is his site. And
that's right. If you want to go to Barcelona and come join us, because it's going to be really, really great. And we'd love to have you.
Oh, man. If I weren't going to France literally 4 days later, I'm just going to miss it. Oh, well. We'll see you soon.
Future one.
Yeah, we'll definitely do it. Thank you, Mike. Yeah. Thank you, Stacey. Thank you all for being here. I hope you'll come back. We do this show every Wednesday, 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 20:30 UTC. You can watch us make it live. But if you can't be here live, don't worry. You can certainly get on-demand versions of everything we do. In fact, that's how most people listen. Go to the website, twit.tv/twig, for every episode. Or better yet, subscribe. If you use a podcast appliance of any kind, however you get your podcast, just subscribe to Twig, because you don't want to miss an episode. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next week on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.